Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Filled in my master studio up here on 57th Street, which is a little satellite studio that we built. And always getting new interesting ideas. Today we're going to talk about rebellion. Rebel. When I was a kid, there was a book called Must You Conform? I forgot who wrote that, but it was a wonderful book. And I thought it was such a wonderful book because the end of the book said, an answer to your question, must you conform? The answer is absolutely no. So now, I'm sure if I read that book today, I might not feel the very same way. The rebellion. You see a little animal. It's starting to grow up. I saw a kitten the other day. It was crawling on top of its mother kitten, scratching its eyes out and trying to jump all over it and bite it. And the mother was just kind of being peaceful with it. All right, get a little. Go ahead, do what you need to do. And the kitten was just fighting as hard as it could. Rebellion. What's important about that? Why is that important? Is it that the only way we ever grow is by exercising our muscle in opposing a force larger than us? Huh. What an interesting question. So what if you get to the point where no forces are larger than you are? You know, what if you get to the point where you feel really comfortable? What happens? I think that's the trouble with retirement. There's no rebellion left. I think if you retire anything, what you do is you retire your rebellion. You say, okay, I give up. No more fighting. I'll play golf. And I think the spirit gets lost in there. The only thing you rebel against is you rebel against, bad health. You fight all new kinds of wars. People do not rebel without a reason. And especially the early adolescent finds just cause for rebellion. What he sees as an infringement of his personal freedom. That's the beginning of it. So for the young adolescent, the first act of rebellion comes with this infringement on your personal freedom. With that, I have two guests in the studio with me today, both whom are of that generation. And Alex and Ramey, both. Hey, say hello on the air just so that you can say you said hello on the air.
Hello.
There's one. A.
Hello, and A from two of us, and Linda Vanilla, of course, and Lauren Sykes, of course. So here we are, the group of us. We're going to discuss this rebellion. So it feels unfair to be made to do what you don't want to do. It feels unfair. But you go to school and you go to high school, and in high school, they tell you what to do. You go get a part-time job, right? Now, here's a good one, Alex. You get a part-time job, all they do is tell you what to do, right?
Correct.
It was a horrible part-time job, right?
Yes.
It was like the worst. It was like the part-time job from hell.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And what made it the part-time job from hell was it was a bunch of lawyers who had nothing to do but to tell you exactly what to do. You were like a gopher.
Yep. And that's exactly right.
What did you do? What did they tell you to do? What kind of things?
Get them coffee, get them water, get them anything that they could think of.
Walk across town, pick up my laundry, anything at all.
Yeah, even if it wasn't in my job description.
You got to do it, and they tell you what to do, and they tell you what to do, and they tell you what to do. And when you made a mistake, what would happen?
I get yelled at.
You get yelled at. I like that. And if they were missing some money, they would accuse you of stealing.
Yep.
So that's something that you swallow because you're trying to make $7 an hour. Right?
Exactly.
Exactly. How long could you swallow it? How long could you do it?
Till it got ridiculous, and then I couldn't handle it anymore.
Something inside you just said no more, even for the money.
Yep.
Got it. Ramey, ever run into those kind of things? Working for something where you just couldn't take it after a while?
Not much. I haven't had much work experience, but I could definitely sympathize with.
How about school experience?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You put up with what they tell you to do in the school?
Yeah, I mean, there's, I used to put up with, like, teachers telling me what to do and whatnot, but, I mean, I guess there's a point when you can rebel, but why rebel when actually what they're doing is basically helping you out, whether it might be go to college or in your future and whatnot.
So why would you fight them?
Well, during that time, it was very, I guess, troubled time. Normally, I was very apathetic and didn't care much about anything, so, yeah.
Yeah, now that's an interesting thing when you don't care about anything. When you don't care about anything, that's different. When your attitude is flat. Like, yeah. Did you have times like that, Alex?
Many times.
When what?
If I have to deal with somebody who's giving me problems, I'd rather, if I don't care about them, I just throw them out of my life rather than cause more problems.
You go dead. You go flat. You go flat inside. Did you go flat inside?
Oh, yeah.
This is one of the things that adolescent, I hate to, I don't want to call you adolescents because it's like a group. But people in that late phase of life have to learn how to do, because you can't just scream and throw things, although a lot of kids do that. You learn how to go dead. Now, here's the trouble. They celebrate you for going dead. They reward you for going dead. They give you raises for going dead. Look, what a nice boy he is. He's so obedient, and so on and so forth. And then when you grow up, they ask you, hey, how come you're so dead? Mm-hmm. See, but this is part of the training. This is part of what happens. Rebellion. Rebellion takes so many different forms that, for example, do you ever hear of civil resistance, civil disobedience, nonviolent resistance, which is like taking place right now down in Wall Street with people saying we don't want this to, we're getting together and we don't want it to be the way it was. Well, I think all of the forms of resistance, including mutiny, armed resistance, revolt, revolution, subversion, and terrorism, are all practiced by people in everyday relationships as well. There's a rebellion that takes place everywhere, mutiny. How could you say it's mutiny? It's mutiny when a bunch of you get together and say, whoever's in charge here, we're not going to listen to them anymore. Kids often do that. You know, they do that. A lot happens with alcoholism in a family. There's a mutiny, right? The kids all say, that's it, no more of this, we're not going to take anymore. And they get together and they have a meeting and they throw Pop into either out the house or in a treatment program. Revolt. That's a term which sometimes used for it's an actual act. You actually revolt. And there's subversion, where you start sabotaging a person, where you start not letting them be who they are anymore. Armand Mill here. What about your rebellion? Where did your rebellion take place as a kid? And what's it like to have watched children go through this rebellious period? Linda, what was it like? You brought up a number of boys. Rebellion, and you watched them rebel, and you saw them. I mean, did you smack them down every time they tried? You have a wooden spoon, which is what my grandmother had.
The initial reaction, I think, by nature as a parent is to stop it. So the first child, all of a sudden, they call it the terrible twos and then the tantrum. So no is usually the first word, and it was with all four of my children. It wasn't mommy, daddy. It was no. So I kind of initially kind of struggled with it, because when you're first a new parent, you're saying, oh my goodness, what am I doing? I have to have some control over this. But I was able to eventually, and hopefully soon enough, see that as their need for independence. And so I kind of welcomed it. It was struggling and it was challenging, but it was certainly, it was exciting to see them, because they become their own person through that no, no, no. And it was almost like no matter what it was, they would just say no. And I felt it. It was just saying, here I am, here I am. So their rebellion I saw as just an independence.
You know, it's kind of an amazing thing to recognize that. I remember seeing that in a 2-year-old child. Recently, a boy who I have great fondness for. And it was great fondness for me. And everything I said, and Max, would you... No, no, no. And I couldn't believe it. Max, would you like to take a ride on this jet plane? No, no, no to everything. And it's just what you're saying. It's this point. It's almost programmed in that no becomes the automatic. Exactly. Now, I see a lot of people nowadays, the same kind of thing. if I run into people and I say anything I want to offer them, they say no. I got one friend who says, I said, how come every time I offer you something, you turn it down? And she says to me, she says, well, because you're always offering things, therefore I automatically say no before you offer it. I'm already set to resist. And I go, oh, I got to pare back on my offering things, you know, because that's not welcomed. So if you're going to rebel and you're going to fight off, maybe some people you say no to and other people you don't. What happened to your sons as they, your sons and your daughter as they were growing up? Did this rebellion ever manifest in anything that caused trouble?
Well, I saw all four of them struggle with adolescence. And I think just as these two young men and our lovely lady Lauren here talked about, I think adolescence is in itself a very challenging and rebellious time because, as Rumi said, you're under, you know, you're sort of child and adult at the same time. So you're getting pressured to achieve in school and perform, and yet at the same time you're feeling that your actual food and lodging is determined by your parent, the parent that you're living with. So that in itself, I think, puts adolescents in a very rebellious place. They don't know who they are. They're looking to grow. They're looking to perform. And they're trying to find out a little bit about themselves in separation from their caregivers, whoever they're living with at the time. So I enjoyed my four children, but I did find adolescence to be a very challenging time.
Yeah, I think
all four of my children.
I think the rebellion of women is different than the rebellion of men. You know, the rebellion of boys seems to be testosteronically driven. You know, here I am, I'm the male, right?
Yes.
How does it appear with women? Let me, Lauren, do you remember being a rebellious kid?
No.
You were never rebellious?
No.
You were always good?
I mean, I spoke out of turn at times, but again, like, I had a level of respect for my parents to where I wouldn't be disrespectful towards them. To an extent. Like, I would test the waters, but I was never, like, a tantrum.
You never had a felt a need to really rebel because you didn't feel like there was anything really bad going on around
you?
Yeah,
there was never a need to really rebel. I'm a very balanced person. I don't really like to throw tantrums or be, like, dramatic.
What about you, Linda? Did you fight?
Yeah, I had a little bit of fight in me that I found that many of the rules and the regulations and the expectations that were placed upon me in my adolescence were, in my thinking at the time, quite unreasonable. So I did oftentimes find myself getting into some heated discussions with my parents and feeling like this is just not fair and why don't I have a life of my own. So I do recall that. And it helped me in, I think, better understanding my own children and listening to them feel that way, that, you know, this is unreasonable. So I think that while sometimes things are worth discussing before tempers get out of control or we lose them, but I think rebellion is an important piece of proper and appropriate communication that we have yet a lot to learn.
You know, but before we write off all rebellion as being irritating and unproductive, this is what you're saying, appreciating the plus side of what your son and daughter is doing. He or she is daring to speak up to your authority, is learning how to state his or her position, is willing to argue his or her case with skilled opposition. I mean, when you fight with your parents, they got everything working for them. They got intelligence, they got knowledge, they got money, they got power. And you become secure enough to brave the disapproval that you're going to get, and tough enough to refuse you automatic or immediate obedience. Now, when a kid learns that, these following skills, you know, present their case to you, secure in braving your disapproval, tough enough to refuse your automatic obedience, you know. Children who are willing to stand up to parents are usually willing to stand up to their peers as well. So if a kid doesn't stand up to their parents, they generally are not too good at standing up to their peers. So this is an interesting thing, seeing, and the pressure to conform that they can create. So I wonder if you're somebody who comes from a fairly blessed childhood, and this I'll ask you about, Lauren, where you didn't have any reason to rebel, did you find that you had less reason to or less power with among your friend group, your peers?
No. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that consider friend. I don't know. Like, I have a specific person that in my life that with their friendships, they consider, they constantly challenge, like, to prove their friendship, they challenge, you know, their peers. I don't feel like there is a need to challenge people that you're friends with. So I don't really, it's not about power struggles with me.
Yeah, no need to. And some for some people it is. Armand will hear with you with a positive mind. Arguing is active resistance. It's about learning to stand up for yourself. And before children learn to do it with peers, they must learn to do it with their parents. So even though it's annoying, parents, celebrate it. Consider that this has got to be something that's your job, you see, that you're learning to do. If they fight you, then you're probably doing a good job. If they fight you too much, if you have to keep check on them, if they really are so far off, you know, so maybe you didn't do a terrifically good job, but there's always an opportunity. Children who do automatically what their parents ask them to do without resistance are at higher risk of doing what they are told by dominating friends, not to mention dangerous strangers. So the rebellion and welcoming the rebellion is a positive thing. I want to hear about yours too, my friends. We're going to be taking your calls a little later at 212-209-2900. The more your son or daughter argues, the more invested in persuading you he or she becomes, the more angry he or she gets on finding out that your mind was made up from the beginning. You know what a terrible thing. You got a fixed mind. Kid argues with you. But you're still just stuck in that same place. So every time you agree to postpone things, to have endless delay, that's another thing that's criminal with children when they're trying to argue. And which is like, wait a minute, it takes some more time, I'll talk to you about it later. This restlessness, this argument of restlessness is murder to the person who is trying to rebel. How could somebody who's trying to rebel be put on hold for so long? And then when they finally blow their cork, you say you don't have to get so upset about it. You make them wrong for getting so upset. So the dishes finally got washed, but maybe not with soap, you know. So you're back to square one. What's going on? Passive resistance is the power of delay. And this is what children learn to do, what young people learn to do. They learn to delay your gratification. So you say to them, this is what you must do. Hey, would you take the chicken out of the freezer? No. Hey, did you take the chicken out of the freezer? Hey, did you take the chicken out of the freezer? See, passive delay. Just anything meant to not give you the power. I'm going to postpone things to not have you have the power. Both active and passive resistance work to some degree. The early adolescent does gain more power of self-determination than he had or she had. Because no parents can hold out against this resistance all the time. It's the end of the day. You're just human. You're tired. You don't want to argue. You're too weary to pursue delay. So you just let some of your requests go. You tell the kid over and over again, pick up the clothes in your room. Pick up the clothes in your room. You had one of those incidents, didn't you, Linda? How did you handle it?
I think with four of my children being such different people, I think I ran the gamut. I had many different experiences. But yes, my second child, who is now in the Peace Corps, he was always the one to leave his clothes all over the floor. And he had a very rebellious spirit. And I initially found that, you know, my rules of the house as mother, I thought, you know, I wanted him to pick up his clothing. And it was a very good example of my need to be able to better understand what his rebellion was really all about. It wasn't about leaving the clothes on the floor. But it was an opportunity for us to be able to really stop and think and talk about, you know, what are the important priorities of maintaining his space of living. And what I was able to then say, okay, you know what, we'll close the door, put a lock on the door, and you leave it the way you wish. And I won't push that, but you have to help me to be a little bit more understanding of what it is I need in the home. And I found that when we were able to openly discuss this, that we were able to respect the rebellion for what it really was, then I think it made for a better a sense of balance in the home.
Armand DeMille, Linda Vanilla, The Positive Mind here in WBAI. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I swore one day I would get an apartment and I'd leave everything on the floor all the time. I just said, nobody is going to tell me what to do at some point. And I finally got an apartment, and I had an apartment of my own. It was on 6th Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue. It was one room. And I left everything on the floor, and I said, ooh, this is ugly. So I started hanging things up. And I realized that I like to hang things up immediately. This is like a few months after I was just the messiest guy in town. So I wondered what that switch was. And I wonder how many of us feel this kind of resistance. Did you ever run into this thing about doing your clothing, having your room cleaned? You know, and what's it like for you, Rainey?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's different. I feel like, especially when you're living under someone's house and your clothes are everywhere, you really don't feel like clean. But I always thought, like, if I were to have an apartment, since it's like mine, something I own, I want to have it clean. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, so you want to have it clean if it's yours.
Yeah, it's a weird thing like that. It's weird. I don't know.
But if you're in somebody else's house, it must be something like staining. You know, it must be something like marking your territory. Here's my dirty jeans go there, and that's my spot. What about you, Alex? Are you a cleaner?
No, I kind of agree with him. I think the reason why I would care if my clothes was messy in my own apartment would be because at that time it's actually my apartment and nobody's telling me what to do. Rather than being in somebody else's apartment and having somebody else tell me what to do, I get to make the decision to do it.
So, but where you live now is you live with your parent.
Yeah.
Right? And do you find that it's yours or it doesn't feel like yours? You have to be told to straighten it up.
Yeah. I feel like it's not mine.
It's not yours. But when you get yours, and I've seen you at other houses where you're very neat. See? It's just in that one spot. So I think this part of adolescence is saying, maybe what we're doing is building it up so that the parent wants to get rid of us. See, maybe if we make it bad enough and ugly enough, the parent will eventually say, here, take this money and get out of here and get your own apartment. Maybe that's the idea. Maybe the idea is to kind of make it so. I mean, it's wonderful to torment a parent. As kids, we used to torment our parents a lot. I remember that. We got this little, we were tormented by them, but we would every now and then get even. Did you ever get even on your parents? Did you do it, Linda?
Oh, sure.
What did you do to torment them?
Sure. There were many times I think I looked to torment my parents because I felt that they, when I was an adolescent, oh my goodness, there was many restrictions on not being able to date, not being able to get into a car. So, of course, I tormented them. I told them that, you know, because of them, my life would be miserable and nobody liked me and I wasn't popular.
But did you torment them by wearing an extra short skirt knowing that they were going to rebel?
I rolled up the skirt because we were in Catholic school, and so we all rolled up the skirt to make them a little shorter. And sure, I used to always let her know, yeah, I'll pay by your rules in the house, but when I leave, I'm going to do my own thing. So that always gave me this sense of, for some reason, I could live my life apart from them, you know. So what they won't know won't hurt them, but I'll be my independent self. So I was a little step ahead of them when I had my own children. And I would say to them, you know, well, wait until you go out and then you can roll up your skirt. You don't have to, you know, do it here. Because they have to feel like a rebel. So it wasn't, I feel that that's an important part of adolescence. I really do. I believe that it's a time when a child, like to get back to the cleaning of the clothing, I realized it wasn't that Chris needed to put the clothes on the floor, but he needed to have a sense of himself because he was one of four children and his older brother was a neatnik. So in his way, it was just like, notice me.
His turf and his stain and right there.
Exactly.
Well, going back to what you said about tormenting parents, I like this as a theme. I wonder how many people could call in with how you tormented your parent. What did you do to kind of just enjoy making them miserable? And how did you like to do it? I mean, we had a couple of things that we did that was, there was one that was, oh, it was terrible. I wonder if I'm going to have to admit this on air. I have to, because I'm that kind of guy. One time my sister and I were made believe we were fighting, and we called my mother who came home, and my mother came home, and my sister had shoe polish on her arm, saying, look, he bruised me. Right? And my mother said, where is he? So I went in the, we built a phony doll on my bed, so it was made of laundry, you see? And she went in there, and she went in, and she, while this doll was laying down, she was so furious that she whacked it, right? And the head of it rolled off on the floor, and she screamed, my son! Meanwhile, my sister and I are hidden behind the door laughing. But then we realized something. As long as we could keep my mother laughing, she wouldn't get up and hit us. So we kept laughing, and we kept laughing, and we kept laughing. And therefore went on past adolescence into a new relationship with Mom. Tormenting your parents. This is good. This is a good subject. I would like to take some calls about tormenting your parents. 212-209-2900. How many of you out there have found specific ways to kind of make yourself stand out by a little bit of torment? Could you think of any, Ramey? Could you?
Yeah, definitely.
What do you got? What's a good way to do it?
I mean, well, I remember I would always try to, like, basically hide their cell phone, hide that sort of stuff. But the problem was that with my parents, it kind of never win because you would either go and hide their stuff, and then they would find out, or they would know it's missing, so then they would take your stuff away. And it was like a cycle of us kind of battling, tormenting each other. And, you know, the parents always had the power, so in the end they would win.
But it's kind of cool that you would hide their cell phones. Hiding their cell phones is one of the worst things you could do.
Yeah.
Right? They can't function. Good. Good. Do you ever have any of major acts of rebellion on your part, Alex?
Yeah. You know, if I want to get back at my parents, what I do is rather than do what they tell me to do, I do the exact opposite. So they tell me clean my room, I just throw more clothes on the floor.
So you do the opposite of what they want.
Exactly.
If they tell you to go shopping, what do you do?
I go shopping for stuff for me.
For you, not for what they said.
Yeah.
You forget what the list said, right?
Yep.
I got it. Now, meanwhile, I imagine that you're going to tell me you never did such a thing, right? Lauren, is that true? What we're learning is you did not actively torment your parents?
No, not actively.
You couldn't think of anything to do because you didn't have any need to do it?
No.
Ah, amazing. So here's the way statistics run. There are 2, 4, 5 of us in the room. 20% of people in life do not torment their parents. The other 80% do, as told by the survey that we just conducted here in the science lab of the positive mind at WBAI at 1:30 in the afternoon. We're going to take a break. When we take a break, we're going to return after some music that seems to be appropriate, and we will take calls from you. And the calls we want to receive is about ways that you discovered to exert your independence, to rebel, to kind of stand up there and say, this is me, and ways that you had of getting even, as well as not getting even, just, you know, because when you're a kid, they have all the power. You just got to find a way to get some of that power back. We'll be right back, my friends. Check it! We'll be right back. Da Beastie Boys. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. How often do we get a chance to play some form of hip-hop here? The Beastie Boys, you got to fight for your right. They say to party. You know, when I first heard it, I thought they were saying, you got to fight for your right to potty. And I said, well, that's an interesting flip because almost, you know, part of growing up, the first thing you got to do is fight for your right to potty. So I wasn't sure which one they were saying. But I got it. I got it. It's how do you party? And what do you do? And sometimes the very rebellion itself is how you form to take your party. So, like, if you feel guilty a lot, one of the things that people tend to do is they tend to go to substances that reduce the mind from guilt. Alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, those kind of things, they take away guilt. Primary thing. So now you get rid of shame and you can just at least relax. Parents don't understand that. They think, what are you doing? You get me a cigarette. Give me a cigarette. A cigarette will calm me down. Calm me down becomes the entire phrase all the time. It calms me down. It brings me home. It makes me feel okay as opposed to unhappy. So part of adolescence is if you don't have a real direct route to get out of this oppressed place where the rebellious part of you is fighting from the inside, and you have something to say but no idea what it is you want to say or no idea how to say it as well, sometimes you just burst out. And the way you burst out is through what they call acting out. You could be a fighter, you could be a partier, you could be any number of things, but you're just trying to find your own chops. That's what the expression is. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Armand.
Hello.
My name is Roberta.
Hello, Roberta.
I was compelled to make this call this afternoon because as I got into my car and turned the radio on, I thought you were talking about my son.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's only a pity because he's off to boarding school now. But I remember my son. He was never openly rebellious. He was always polite, had good manners. Other people thought he was just a great kid. But my lasting impression of him, and you know, it's coincidental that he has the name of one of your panelists there. I think
Alex O'Reilly.
I'm sorry.
Alex O'Reilly.
Chris.
Oh, Chris.
I heard somebody mention Chris.
Oh, yes, that's Linda. I thought you were going to say you named your son Linda, and I said, oh, now I know why he's rebelling.
No, well,
Chris, right, Chris is Linda's son.
He never did anything I told him. And as you were talking about the clothes, his pet peeve was to leave the clothes piled in one corner of the bed. The bed would be perfectly made up, and there was one little corner that I hated, that he knew I hated, and he would always leave his clothes piled up there.
Wow.
Until one day I read him the Riot Act, and then I thought everything was fine. About a couple of days later, I found the clothes in a pile underneath the bed where I didn't see it. So he was determined to defy me no matter what. I took him to every psychologist. They all said he was fine. And then I realized it must be about me. I thought maybe he had a hearing problem. I thought all kinds of things. And I was thinking, well, you know, I'm a former teacher. I have some nursing experience. What is wrong with this child?
There's a thing, you know. So Roberta, thank you. Because what you're saying is you learned, you questioned your own self while you were going through it. And lucky
Absolutely.
For him, he had as a parent somebody who, number one, listens to the positive mind and therefore is willing to be open to change. And number two is as loving as you are. I hear how much you love him, and that just comes right through.
Well, now he's at boarding school, and he was home last weekend, and he told me, oh, the boys don't know how to do their laundry. But he's telling me how he tells them to do their laundry. I've been to his room. His room is immaculate. Everything is in order. The shoes are all lined up underneath the bed. And I'm like, okay.
Because it's all his, Roberta, you see.
It's all his.
Because it's all his. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armando Mills. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Omar.
Omar.
Hello?
Yes. 212-209-2900.
Being independent? Hello?
Yes, I hear you, Omar. We got
okay, I'm sorry. It's just that it seems like I have a bad disconnection. I think that in my opinion, the most independent person of all is one who's true to oneself and true to one's values. If we have shaky values, we're going to have a shaky self. And you just have to be true to oneself. You can't cave into peer pressure. You have to realize that these are difficult stages that we're all going through and just deal with it. And people like yourself are always there to help us.
Omar, your usual beautiful self, I thank you so much.
You know I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it, my brother.
I got it.
You take care.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Let's
Hello,
take
Hello, Mr. DeMille.
Yes.
How you doing? Love you. Well, my rebellion story, we rebelled. My sister used us to rebel against my mother, but my mother got us back. My sister didn't like to clean, and I'm a neat freak now. My mother, she took the white glove treatment with everything. And if pots and things wasn't clean, she wouldn't say anything, put them back. But one incident around maybe like 3 months before Christmas time came, she had this high closet, the closet used to pull down and hide things in. So we jumping up on the bed one day, and my sister see these things up in the closet. And she stopped and she get a ladder. And she started taking them down. And we played with these things for 2 months. So Christmas Eve night, my mother is, having us go to bed, and she's go up to look in the closet, and we hear a scream. And we're like, oh, my God, she found out. So what had happened, Christmas, we thought we had got away with it because my sister had us. She was upset with my mother for having to clean up the house anyway. So what happened was at Christmas time, we couldn't wait to get up to see all the toys, and there was nothing under the tree. So what's going on with, So my mother said, I found out that you guys had played with the toys, and all your toys that you played with, she said, I was holding them for the neighbor next door, so I gave them and your toys. So she got us.
Oh, my gosh.
She got us back, so I said, the next time I think about rebelling, I really have to put some thought into it.
Right, and you got to watch out for these grown-ups.
Yeah.
You got to watch out for these grown-ups. Jesus, they got too much power.
She got us back. But thank you so much. I love your program.
Thanks a lot for calling in. 212-209-2900. You got to watch out for those grown-ups. They're smarter than you are sometimes. I like lying to a grown-up. I like when adolescents lie to a grown-up, and you start making up your story as you go along. Well, what happened was the bus came. I missed the bus because I was helping somebody who had fallen down. And that's why I couldn't get to school I tried calling the school, but my cell phone battery ran out. It just becomes beautiful story after story after story. And if you're a parent that's listening to this who knows that whoever you're talking to is just going to keep making up lies, sometimes you can have a good time just feeding it. Let's see how creative you can be. You wind up with very creative minds that way, You wind up with somebody who's got a very creative head. Well, keep spinning it. Keep spinning it. Keep spinning it. But now don't do that back to your kids. See, kids got to understand that somebody is going to be honest. And most parents are not honest with their children. It's a pity. And so what can you expect back? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Who is this?
My name is Joanne from New Jersey.
Hello, Joanne.
Hi. My thing, I grew up as an only child, and I was blessed to have three children of my own. My youngest is the boy, who my daughters say I let get away with more things than they ever did. My thing is, only thing I can't stand is a liar. I can't tolerate lying, but, little white lies. But kids think today that we as parents grew up as parents. We never were children, and we never tried the things that they do. And it gets me with this commercial on mainstream TV radio talking about total transformation. They're going to charge you to transform your kid. Well, total transformation worked back in the day with punishment by taking our favorite things away, or even the spanking on the behind, which never hurted us. But I'm totally against trying to psychologically pay for trying to transform your child. A child doesn't have to be beaten or, you know, downgraded. You know, just normal conversation, talk, conversation, because they're nothing but little people trying to develop and find their way in life.
Well, Joanne, let me ask you a question about something you said. You said the one thing you can't tolerate is lying.
Exactly.
All right. Now, what do you do to encourage somebody to tell you the truth? You see, here's where the big question comes. If somebody turns to you, and if your son turns to you and says to you, I want you to know I took some money out of your purse, and I went and I spent it on some grass, and I was smoking with my friends down in the basement, and I met this girl down there, and she's 16, but we had sex, and I didn't wear any protection because I didn't think I had to, and that's my truth.
Okay, well, Mr. DeMille, I think I'll be going to enlist in one of the crisis centers because I'll probably be ready to kill him. You know, I mean, it's the
so
truth.
So you're saying to him, don't tell me. You're saying, don't tell me the truth because I can't handle the truth.
No, I'll be able to handle it. It might take me a time out to process it, but hopefully I've instilled the proper guidance and moral structure in my children, because like I say, the last one, he'll be 19, the other two are 36 and 30, and they helped me with the boy who just entered Rutgers. So I think hopefully I did a good job.
Well, Joanne, I'm sure you did a good job, but I'm going to make you a suggestion to change your life. I want you to tell your kids, it's okay to lie to me. Whenever you feel like lying to me, just lie to me. And then when you want to tell me the truth, tell me the truth. And it's going to be okay with me. If I find out you were lying, I'm not going to punish you in any way. If you did that with your kids, you would be amazed at how it changes things. You have nothing to lose, you know, Joanne?
Yeah.
Nothing to lose.
You said a mouthful. I guess I will try that with my son, especially because I don't want him to feel like he can't come to me honestly, at one point or another, you know?
Well, if there's going to be punishment or reaction, usually it's not wise to tell the truth. You see? It really pays to tell the truth to people who will embrace it and understand it.
I'd rather for him to fear punishment from the Creator than me.
Yeah.
By morals and standards, you understand?
Sure I do. Sure
Thank
I do.
You so much for that advice, though, but I sure will, because he's at the college, he's getting freedom, he's at the college, he's starting college, so he might want to test his bounds, so I'm going to try that.
Thank you.
I'll take your suggestion. Thank you.
Sure, I was reading something in the...
Okay,
bye-bye.
I'll get back to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I was reading something that came from the Old Testament where God said to Moses, put down this rule. And the rule was, it's in the Kabbalah. And the rule was, let me see if I can find this. I got this right here for you. Here's the law. If a man has a stubborn or rebellious son who does not obey the voice of his father and the voice of his mother, and does not listen to them when they discipline him, then his father and mother shall take hold of him and bring him to the elders at the gate of town. They shall say to the elders, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He does not obey our voice. He is a profligate and a drunkard. Then all the men of the town shall stone him to death. You must purge the evil from among you. All Israel will hear of it and be afraid. Now that's the way it is in the Torah. Now, of course, what people say is, no, you have to interpret it. Then God's not saying that you got to bring kids who are liars to get stoned. Actually, kids who are liars do get stoned, don't they? And even if they're not liars, they get stoned. Kids get stoned anyway. But it's mainly how harsh a perception we have of this thing about honesty from children when you don't allow them the room to be themselves. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Armand. I have a story and I have a question after that.
What's your name?
My name is Katya.
Katya.
Yes. I was rebellion, but my father, he never punished me for being rebellion. So I constantly felt comfortable in confronting him with things I didn't think was right. And in school, when I was in second grade, I was 7 years old. And we have a very harsh teacher, and she would not let us go to the bathroom. So what I did, I don't know how I did that, but I got a bunch of kids in the class, made a circle around me, and I pee in the classroom.
Yeah, good for you. You got everybody here is enjoying this one. So you peed, you got everybody made it. She wouldn't let you go, and you just had everybody circle around you.
She wouldn't let anybody go into recess.
That's an
act. So I thought that was so unfair.
Uh-huh.
So.
And what happened? Consequently, what happened?
That's the thing. My father never punished me for being rebellious. Never.
So he, in some level, knew that if you run into something unfair, he was encouraging you to fight for your rights no matter what it is.
Right. He would say to me, you know, if you tell me the truth, you'll not be punished. But if you don't tell me the truth, and there will be consequences.
Oh.
So he encouraged me to be truthful. And he always followed through. You know, I would do something wrong, I'll tell him, and, you know, he'll talk to me, and that will be it.
Katya, it sounds like you miss him a great deal.
I do.
Oh, no. Yeah, I heard it. See, let's get disconnected. She cut your call right back if you can. Let's see if we can get you back on.
Well, her line is still there.
But... His line is still there. Katya, you still there?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about your dad. You miss your dad, don't you?
I do. I miss him quite a bit.
He died?
He died when I was 16, yes.
So you had a father till you were 16, and then he died at 16. How did he die?
No, he died when I was 16. Heart complications.
And it must have been sudden, and it certainly left you isolated in the world because you trusted him more than you trusted anybody in the world.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And what happened to you since? Do you have other relationships?
I'm married and have 3 kids. And, my husband is totally different. He grew up where he had to lie to survive, and he's, you know... We have problems that he cannot be honest and the little things. And I said, just say whatever it is, and, you know, we're not going to get killed for it. And a little annoying, but it's just 2 different backgrounds.
It takes a long time. How long have you been married?
12.
12 years?
Yeah.
It takes a while till this level of trust develops, where people feel like they really could be clear with each other. And if you're lucky, if you get to that point,
right.
You know, it's very fortunate. Not many people get there, but if you get to that point, it would be wonderful. You certainly sound like you've got a beautiful heart. And I can't imagine you not marrying somebody who's got a good heart. You just got to be able to get to it, you know? He sounds like he's a real damaged guy.
Yeah.
And he was really damaged. So as he recovers with your love, with your affection, you know, and on his own, maybe the two of you will get to a place where you do have this kind of nice mutual support.
Right.
And maybe the two of you will go one day and go pee in a classroom together. Maybe. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. We've got time for one more call. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hey, Armand, how you doing there?
I'm doing good. Your name?
All right, Mark.
Hello, Mark.
Man, I tormented my mother, on April Fool's Day. This isn't politically correct, but I told her I was gay. I happened not to be.
Uh-huh.
You're probably
That's so cool. No. That's so cool. What a wonderful thing to do to a mom.
Oh, good.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. It must have set her back 100 yards. Yeah, did you tell her, like, with sincerity? Like you were confessing?
Yeah.
Wonderful. That's one of the best ones I can imagine. That's good.
Yeah, and she took it well.
Right, supposedly, right? Like, meanwhile, inside her poor mind is turning to mash.
Yeah, and then also, I was seeing a girl who was a different color than me, and she asked about the next girl, like, what color she was. And I said, what's the difference? Now, she happened to be white, and I said, she's black, isn't she? And I just didn't answer. So she assumed she was. She assumed she was all along, even right when she was meeting her. And it was funny. And
well, it's kind of like what you did with your girlfriend, you did with your mother.
Yeah.
It's quite an interesting thing. It's so coincidental that people do that sometimes. That sometimes they do to their girlfriends what they do to their mothers.
Oh, no,
I
girlfriend, I was doing this to my mother. She asked what color she is.
I got
you. She was white. Instead of saying she's white, I said, what difference does it make? So she would almost automatically think she was black.
Hey, listen, I got to get going. Okay. Thanks for calling in, Mark.
Oh, have a good one. I'll keep on tormenting my mom.
Okay. Hey, go to thepositivemind.com and you could listen to this today. Next week, we're with you only on Tuesday, not Wednesday. And then back with you on the Tuesday, Wednesday schedule after that. Send me an email, if you would, armand@thepositivemind.com. My special thanks to Alex and to Rainey and to the rest of the crew.
On Wednesday,